Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Wednesday, November 20th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. Let's go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me as two guests join me on the program here today. The first, professional handicapper Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. We'll chat some NBA for Wednesday night, take a look at the Week 13 college football card and the Week 12 NFL card there with Brian. Second half of today's show, Wes Reynolds will join me at Wes Reynolds, the number one on Twitter, host on VSiN. We'll talk with him about college football and the NFL as well. Then also take a look at the two golf events for this week, the RSM Classic on the PGA Tour and the DP World Championship over on the European Tour. Over at bangthebook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Lots of great stuff already up there for this weekend in the NFL and college football. Daily NBA, daily college basketball, daily NHL as well. We cover all the niche markets too. No UFC this week. NASCAR is done, but we'll still have some soccer stuff for you. Once the tennis season rolls back around, we'll come up with that. And also some esports available over at the website as well. Finally, as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB and the number 200 is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. Two guests on the program here today. We start with professional handicapper Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. Brian, how's it going today, man?
Hey, everything's going great. Good to be back on the show. And I did a podcast yesterday, and as soon as I sat down to do the podcast, my smoke alarm started going off in one of the other places in the house. And it was right in the middle of the podcast, couldn't get up and go get it. As soon as the podcast ended, I packed everything up and went looking for it, and it went off. It just stopped working or stopped beeping. I'm starting to think that I'm a little bit possessed here. There's a ghost in here who doesn't want me to do some of these podcasts.
Well, hopefully the ghost is okay with doing mine, and hopefully we don't have any kind of issues here on today's show. And I want to open with something that's very important for all of our listeners out there. Last weekend, I loved my Super Contest card. I was a huge fan of it. I'm thinking, all right, I'm finally going to get one of those elusive 5-0s. I went 2-3. Did go 3-2 in the Circa Million. Wound up switching the Dolphins and the Saints between the two entries. But, Brian, it's so frustrating in this business to feel like you really love something and then have it come up short. That hangover just kind of lasts for a while.
Yeah, it does. I've been on a losing streak myself. I used Memphis yesterday against the Golden State Warriors. And, Memphis hadn't been a favorite all year, but the situation was right there for them. We've seen Golden State. They've only got like two guys on the entire team at this point that they could create their own shots. It's a team that grades out by my numbers as to be the worst team in the NBA by far. And yet the Grizzlies just didn't show up and never had a chance in that game. And I'm still scratching my head as to what happened with my analysis. You're always trying to learn from your loss. You're lucky if you win, or you got to learn if you're unlucky if you lose. And a lot of people pay attention to the teams that they've lost on or the games that they've lost. But they just assume they should have won every game, so they don't go back and check to see if they've been lucky. And it's something you really have to do after every game and see if it played out the way you thought it did, or maybe, you just got lucky in that game. And, it's not been going good for me lately, so there's been a lot of looks at what happened the night before for me lately.
And it's such a difficult thing, too. I mean, again, like I said, I loved my NFL card, and it is very, very rare for me to love an NFL card. I mean, it's a very tough market to beat, as we know. Obviously, there's so much that goes into the gameplay itself that you just cannot account for, the officiating, turnovers, coaching decisions, so on and so forth. But I got to say, man, it's one of the hardest things for me with this business is to try and keep my confidence level up. I know you and I were talking before the show that, you have been in a little bit of a rut there with your plays. You wind up getting gun shy. You wind up not wanting to play things. On the other hand, it's kind of one of those things, and you and I are both baseball guys, you kind of got to hit your way out of a slump sometimes. And it's easier said than done, obviously. But, man, at this time of the year, with so much going on, all these different betting markets, if you've got a crisis of confidence, it just makes it that much harder. And That's the spot I'm in right now. I mean, I had a terrible college basketball night last night, too. It's frustrating to wake up the morning after and just have that stuff linger.
Yeah, it does. And I've been doing this close to 40 years, and it still affects me. It doesn't affect me nearly as much as it affects a lot of the other guys I work with. Not saying that I don't take losses better. I take losses better than anybody else. The thing is, I've been through it all so many times that I know there's going to be another side to it coming up just anytime soon, which is another reason why I don't get all excited when I have wins and if you're on a winning streak, because eventually, you know, we're all trying to get to that point where at the end of the year, you need to hit 52.38 to break even. And we're all trying to just better that in the full year. And then that's how you judge how you've done, not just a week, not just a day, not just a month. So, but you're right. It's a different feeling when you get out of bed, when you're winning. You can't wait to get to that card. But if you're losing, especially if you're having some tough losses, it takes a little, you know, I'm not a coffee drinker, but I could assume that it takes you an extra cup of coffee to get up and get ready to do that if you're not seeing the card well. And yeah, you know, it's funny because, you know, I was just back in Ohio for a family emergency. I just didn't have the time to put in my full effort each and every day, and I won all the time. It was a piece of cake. And I found that when I go on vacation, my records are always better. So maybe I'm just, looking at the surface stats and it's working out that way. You know, if I get somebody to help me just move to Hawaii full time, they'd be a rich man and I'd be a happy man if you want to move me down there. But yeah, get back to Vegas and get back into my routine and start losing. But hey, that's part of the game. And you just have to make your adjustments. And but the confidence level definitely has an effect. You know, some guys shoot out more plays when they're losing, assuming that they continue to have an edge. I tend to give out less plays, which lessens the blow and keeps me in the positive in just about every sport I have.
Well, on the bright side, there's always a new card the next day for you to look at and try to figure out. And we got a big card here tonight in the NBA. Lots of games, several double-digit favorites on the card, though. Four of the games with double-digit favorites here kind of speaks to the current state of where the NBA is, much like all the other leagues that are out there. But any angles, any first or second half things you're looking for, any types of bounce back scenarios that have kind of caught your eye a little bit here for Wednesday?
Well, I know the New York Knicks are playing better ball, and granted, they're playing a lesser competition, but, you know, they are playing a lot better ball than they did earlier in the season. The Philadelphia game, I can't see Philadelphia going out to try to run up a score, and they've used the load management on Embiid before, so it would not surprise me if, you don't see a lot of their stars playing long minutes in this game. Couple others I'm taking a look at. The Houston-Denver game is sort of interesting to me. You've got a Houston team that enters here on a big winning streak, and you know they're only getting 1 point right now in Denver, which is kind of strange because when you take a look at the Houston Rockets, you know they just played 3 games in 4 days, had yesterday off. Now they're playing Denver, and they got to play the Clippers in 2 days. But this Denver Nuggets team is very well rested. They had 2 days off before they played on Sunday at Utah, and that's the only road game they play in an 8-game stretch. Now they're back after 2 more days off. So you've got a well-rested Denver team playing at home in altitude, only laying a point to Houston here. And as I say, Houston's fat and happy coming into this one. The line opened at 2 for Denver and has been bet down to 1. That tells me that maybe there's an injury here that I don't know about. In fact, you go down the card today, and there's a few games where you could tell there's injuries. Brooklyn opened 5.5, has been bet down to 3.5 and 4. I'm assuming Kyrie's not going to play. I think that's what that's telling me. Orlando against Toronto, 4.5 down to 3, and a good spot for Toronto there. Tells me Toronto's not going to be fully there this week, for this game. But the load management is something that you really got to take a look at. That was that game yesterday, the first game on the schedule, that Portland game. That line moved up to +4 and then ended up closing, I think, at -3.5 the other way. It was just one of those games that as soon as one team would announce somebody was out, the line would move. Then the other team says, well, since he's going to be out, I think I'll rest these guys. And then the line moves back the other way. You know, the NBA has been hard to bet for years for a lot of people, but it gets even harder when you don't even know who's going to play and people change their mind all day long.
So I guess the follow-up question to that would be then, you know, obviously it's difficult because you're sending out premium selections to clients. What's your market entry time for the NBA? Because the news seems to be breaking throughout the day here. And of course, you know, again, you can read into some of these line moves. Sometimes it's people trying to grab a number. Sometimes it's people speculating. You know, obviously you can speculate a lot of times with some of the superstars and the load management thing that you mentioned, but at what point during the day do you feel confident locking in those NBA plays with, you know, some of the news that we get over the course of the day?
Yeah, I'm less confident in that regard because you never know when to put them out. I usually have a number I'm looking to get, and once I see that number, I bet it, and then that's when I send it out. I try to send them out as early as possible. That way the client's got all day to be able to shop that line at his books. I know some guys put them out right before game time, and sure, you've got all the information there, but you don't have any edges in that line at that point. I'm trying to get ahead of the line movements. And if there's some talk that somebody might not play, I want to get in that earlier. But I try to do it right after I place a bet, and it all depends on the number in the game and who I expect to play.
Well, again, that is the tough part is, you know, trying to navigate this balance between getting out in front of a line move, trying to get some good value on that number. And then of course, you know, 15 minutes later, 20 minutes later, somebody may be announced out or some game time decision may be finalized. It's definitely tough in the NBA. So, you know, kudos to you for the success that you've had and, you know, the success that I think you expect to have as we go forward here on the hardwood. But we transition over to the gridiron here. We do some college football for this week and a couple of blowouts in action on Tuesday night. Maybe we're setting up for a couple of blowouts on Wednesday night too. Buffalo up to 8.5 and 9. Miami of Ohio, 31.5 against Akron. I know we beat a dead horse here with the MAC, but man, I don't remember the conference ever being not just this bad, but this, you know, not entertaining.
No, it's, I used to get all excited about these MAC games during the week. You know, our past, we're both graduates of Akron University, and we take pride in knowing a little bit more about the MAC than most people. And it's just not as been is fun the last couple of years. I don't know if I've just come to the realization that when bad teams, and this, as you pointed out, conferences or the MAC is really down this year. Bad teams, there's so much variance in bad teams. We see that, you know, yesterday Ohio wins that game by 42 points. A team I bet on with Ohio, I think the last two games, well, I think I lost them both. Just hadn't played well. And, you know, Northern Illinois, I could see that one coming yesterday. I gave out a video free play on Eastern Michigan in that game. Northern Illinois needed to win out to make a bowl, but it was clear that this Northern Illinois team is just not very good this year. And so a lot of people thought, hey, they need to grab these last two games and, you know, go bowling. Well, that's nice as a premise, but you've got to know the talent level on some of these teams. And, they just are not good enough to be able to be put in that spot where they're a favorite in that game against an Eastern Michigan team who, to me, was the better team, and you were getting 3.5 points. A couple games tonight, this Toledo team, I don't know what the hell to make of this team. You know, they just fell apart midway through the season. Buffalo's been a little bit more consistent, and Buffalo's taken money. Toledo's already bowl eligible. Buffalo continues to need victories. Akron, want no part of Akron. And it's funny how, you know, I was at a meeting the other day with a lot of bookmakers, a lot of the sharpest guys in town, and we had a debate on who the worst team in college football was, and they were all saying UMass. And I said, yeah. I said, my numbers say UMass. I said, but keep in mind that, you know, Akron lost to UMass. I said, I vote for Akron to be the worst team. And the highs haven't been, from a power rating standpoint this year, the highs haven't been like Alabama either last year or the year before. They were setting records as to such a great team that they were. There are so many teams right now that are as low from a power standpoint that I have ever had. And Akron's one of them, Akron, UMass. There's a group of five down there, that Bowling Green, one of them, that I want no part of if I don't have to. But then again, you know, my job is to find these underdogs that are worthy of a wager, try to get on them before they make the corrections and start playing well. Well, none of these teams got on that this year. So there's a lot of guys that like to play those ugly dogs that are having a tough time in college football this year.
All right, so we will talk about a MAC game here as we go over to Saturday, and this one's Ball State and Kent State, game 117-118 here in this one. And I mean, this is probably the best MAC game of the weekend. Interesting here, both of these teams have to win because they're sitting on four victories. Both of them need to win out to go to a bowl game, if they would even get selected with six wins to go to a bowl game. But this is an interesting one here because you've got Ball State laying 3 with extra juice or 3.5 on the road. And I think if you look at the body of work for these two teams, you could make a case that Ball State maybe should be a little bit more of a favorite. At the same time, there's still a 4-6 team against a 4-6 team laying a road price in a role that they're not very used to.
Yeah, Ball State's played a little bit tougher schedule. That's one of the things you need to look at. I like Ball State in this game. This is the only MAC game that I've had any interest in this week. Ball State's a team, as you mentioned, they need to win out. They haven't had a non-losing season since 2013. So I think it's very important for the seniors on this team to at least go out on a positive here, which would be going 6-6 and making at least themselves bowl eligible and not having the losing team. Next week they host Miami, Ohio. Miami's obviously the better team. But that could be a victory for Ball State. They're just as good. They just haven't put it all together. But they lost 3 straight games. But, you know, my numbers have them being the clear favorite here. Kent's off an upset victory over Buffalo in a game that I didn't think they deserved. They lost the yardage battle by 95 and the first down battle by 4. Buffalo ran for 1.8 yards per carry better than Kent State did in that game. And Kent State still find a way to win. And that's not one of the teams that I think of for a good passing game when I take a look at the MAC. You know, you take a look at Kent, they've lost a yardage 4 straight games, where Ball State is one of the yardage 3 out of 5 games. So you try to break it down a little bit more than the final scores in these games. And I just think the Ball State's the hungrier team here. I like to play on teams that I think are better than what their records are. And I'm getting one of those here against a team who probably is pretty happy with that victory last week and probably didn't deserve it.
Well, I know that's an angle that you played a lot in the NBA in terms of looking at teams that, you know, led most of the game or playing to an expectation most of the game. And then you kind of write off something fluky that happens in the fourth quarter. Similar thing there with Kent State. I got to say, I mean, as far as power ratings overlays go, this is one of my biggest of the week. I've got Ball State 7 in this game. So I may end up playing this one. I still haven't really decided. I'm still a little bit, as we talked about, gun-shy about playing the MAC. But I think that this is one where there is some value here on the road team. How about game 125-126 here? Texas A&M and Georgia. And this one's intriguing for a variety of different reasons. The first of which is that Georgia has already won the SEC East. Does not matter what happens in this game for them. On the other hand, they can't lose because it would take them out of the college football playoff discussion. So you kind of wonder what Georgia is going to look like here this week, laying almost 2 touchdowns against Texas A&M.
Yeah, especially when they play their big rival, Georgia Tech, next week. And as much as people like to play underdogs, I don't want no part of that underdog in this game against Georgia next week. Yeah, Texas A&M has played a lot better ball. But, you know, Texas A&M, from a game score standpoint, is coming off their best game of the year. And I like to fade teams when they hit the peak, sort of like a stock market type of thing. We kind of talked about this in the last segment. So I think that's a little bit of value here on Georgia. The line's been bet 14.5 down to 13.5. And, you know, a couple of the sharper places are sitting at 13 at this point. So it's bouncing between the two. But, you know, I think it's just going to be extremely good defensive game. This Georgia defense on the season has just been amazing to me. You take a look at how many points they've allowed. The most points Georgia has allowed in any game all season long was that 20 points they lost, and then lost to South Carolina. They lose that game 20-17. In that game, they allowed less than 300 yards. So that 20 points just tells you how good this Georgia defense is, and it has been amazing. You go back, look over the season, three times they've shut out the opposition. You know, one of them being a Missouri team, but that was after the Missouri basically was in a different position than they were earlier in the season when Missouri was like a, I think they made the top 25 at one point. But yeah, now they're playing this Texas A&M team, and Texas A&M's, you know, they're playing good ball as of late. They come in off of four wins. Their defense has played a little bit better as of late, but they haven't faced an offense as good as Georgia. Last time they played in their conference, they played Mississippi State, gave up 30, although they scored 49 themselves. So I'm leaning with Georgia here. Don't think it makes my card, but I like to fade the team that's off of their best play of the season. And I just think this Georgia team is much better on both sides of the ball than Texas A&M.
And of course, that South Carolina game for Georgia, a pick six right before half that completely changed the complexion of that game. So they even only gave up, you know, the 13 points to South Carolina on offense with right. That pick six that factored into the equation. So one more game to talk about here on the college card. And I think this one's intriguing. And I got to say, you know, a few weeks ago after the loss to Duke, I lowered Virginia Tech a lot in my power ratings. And I kind of wondered, maybe Justin Fuente's not the guy for this job. You know, Bud Foster obviously retiring at the end of the year. Kind of wondered about the state of this Hokies program. Game 187-188 is Pitt and Virginia Tech. Vatek up from 3 to as high as 4.5 out there now. And they are playing absolutely phenomenal football here.
They are, and I'll be honest, I faded them last week and got to hand it to me really early. Against Georgia Tech. I didn't think they'd have any interest after playing Notre Dame and then that big showdown against Wake Forest. And then with Virginia on deck is the big rivalry. So I thought that was a situation with Pitt coming up, Georgia Tech and Pitt, that we could take advantage of them. And I was completely wrong. And this Virginia Tech team, when they lost to Duke 45-10, you thought their season was over. But you know, you take a look at how this team has played lately. The last two games have been their best two of the season. Their last four games overall have been their best of the season. The game against Georgia Tech, I just talked about playing teams off of a peak performance. That was by far their best game score of the season. So if you're looking to play Virginia Tech, you're looking to play a team at the peak. But maybe it's just a team that had the talent all along and they just couldn't put it together early. Pitt's a team that, you know, not a big offensive team. A lot of people look to fade Pitt, but Pitt's one of those teams that I've been very good on. I picked good spots to play on Pitt this year, and that defense has been very good. The most they've given up on the season is 34 to Central Florida, and that was a team, if you remember, that was a team coming into that game, still undefeated, Central Florida in that contest, and they were a huge underdog, and that was one of my biggest plays of the season was Pitt in that game. And, you know, though even the week before, you look back on it now and they lose to Penn State 17-10, holding Penn State to 17 points is pretty impressive. So you got a very good defense here in Pitt that I really like to play on. But I don't want to stand in the way of Virginia Tech. I could see lots of reasons for me to play Pitt here, but I got run over last week. I'm not going to stand in front of that train again this week. I don't care, even if it is a peak performance that they played last week. Normally this would be, if I was seeing things well, I'd probably be on Pitt in this game. But I went 0-3 last week in college football on Saturday and a little bit tentative this week.
I think what the big factor is here in this game is, can Pitt get pressure? You know, Virginia Tech going with Hendon Hooker a couple of games ago against Notre Dame, they wound up doing more of like a wildcat type setup where Quincy Patterson is a quarterback, but he's probably more of a runner than a thrower. That's what I wonder about here for Pitt, because Pitt leads the country with 45 sacks on the season. If they get into that Virginia Tech backfield, obviously they can make this game a whole lot different than what the line movement is suggesting. If they can't, then you do wonder about Pitt's defense. Their pass defense, very good because of those sacks in large part, because of that pressure. It's an interesting game. I think this is more of an X's and O's type of game as opposed to what we're probably seeing out there in the marketplace of people piling on that Virginia Tech side. So I think it'll be a fun game. I think it'll be an interesting game. As you mentioned, probably not a game that I'll have too much involvement in either. We transition over to the NFL here to finish up the show for a few minutes, and we take a look at game 259-260, Oakland and the New York Jets. A lot of 2.5 starting to pop up now with Oakland a road favorite.
Yeah, this Oakland team is, at least to me, has been a real surprise this year. I didn't like the hire at head coach originally, and I hadn't seen anything that shows me that this Oakland team, who will soon be in Vegas, was anything to get overexcited about. But Oakland's been pretty good all season long. I give Gruden a lot of props. And, you know, they won three straight games, been in Detroit, the Chargers, and Cincinnati. When you take a look at Oakland, you know, from a road standpoint, they go to Minnesota, lose by 20, go to Indy, win that game, which at the time was pretty impressive. Now I go to Chicago, win in Chicago. Green Bay lose by 18, and then Houston lose that close game by 3. So it's a team in Oakland that's shown they can win on the road. But I'd prefer the Jets here at 3. I think you may be able to still get 3, but you're paying extra juice. 2.5, as you pointed out, is probably the best you're going to get at this point. Heard a story the other day, and I'll just go through some of the articles that I read that, you know, the quarterback, Darnold, got together with Adam Gase, and they discussed what worked, what has been working in the offense. And last week they narrowed the offense down a little bit, and, you know, the team put up 34 points against Washington. And granted, it was Washington, but you are getting the Jets team in a definite step-up situation. They played Washington, the Giants, and Miami the last 3 weeks. They went 2 out of those 3 games. Loses to Miami, still, that one kind of puzzles me. But it is a step-up game for the Jets. They've looked better as of late, but they've done so against very weak opposition. Prefer the Jets at 3. Can't get the 3. I don't know if I can get involved here.
What about Jets plus 8.5? Is this a teaser candidate game for you or no?
Well, let me see what we've got the total at this point.
46-ish? 46.5?
Yeah, as long as it's under 47, I think it's a situation where a teaser may work. Jets signed a teaser with the Jets last week that worked out for me. Unfortunately, Jacksonville, didn't hold up their bargain. But, yeah, there's different ways to play each and every one of these games. And, you know, teasers are always one that you could take a look at, try to find something to go with it here in a low total game. May be the problem. But, you know, they got a total of 37 in the Denver Buffalo game, but the line's 4. So you're not getting that key number of 3. It's already in your favor. So if something opens up, you know, if you can play it open-ended, I could see it. But with the way the lines are right now, you may have a hard time getting a true Stanford Wong teaser on this game to find another partner.
Well, and the other game that we're going to talk about here is in that teaser range, Seattle and Philadelphia, game 273-274. This one flexed out of Sunday Night Football, which is why it's all the way down at the bottom of the board by rotation number. Seattle, 1.5-point dog out on the road at Philadelphia. This one's down from 2.5 or 3. The problem with teasing it is that this total's 48.5. So
yeah,
a little bit high to play the teaser. But what about this handicap in general, Brian?
Yeah, I was looking at that, and I said, yeah, anytime you have a higher total, you have more chances of variance, which is why we prefer the lower scoring game or the lower total games when we have a teaser. I played Philadelphia. That was my only NFL play last year, and we know what happened in that one. Just Philadelphia, the defense is playing really good ball as of late. 13 to Buffalo, 14 to Chicago, 17 to New England. All through three teams struggling offensively, and it's not rare. It's rare we can say that about New England. It's been the New England defense has been so good this year, but the Eagles offensively just haven't put it together. They continue to have injuries to key players, especially at the receiver standpoint, and you've got to be able to spread the field to be able to have success. I've been trying to fade Seattle all year. I think Seattle's not as good as what they're being graded at, but I've had a hard time having success doing it. I think Philadelphia is the better team here, but yet I don't know if I can trust them. And, this Seattle side is something that I guess I would lean more in that direction. You take a look at who they played on the road. They've yet to lose on the road. You know, they get that game against San Francisco last week. That was a huge game, a statement game. So they're a little bit of a drop down for that. And this will be their second straight road game. But I guess I trust Seattle more here than I do Philadelphia. And, they've given me nothing on the road to want to play against that. So, lean the teaser here, lean Seattle on the money line, but not sure I'm going to get there either way.
No, and just in general here, as we wrap up the segment, looking at the NFL card this week, I mean, you want to try to play dogs in the NFL whenever possible. But this week, I mean, Miami is tough to take. Denver's in an interesting back-to-back road spot and a long trip out to Buffalo. Cincinnati is a train wreck. The Giants are also a bad team. The Jets that we already talked about. Carolina's taking on a New Orleans team that looks great, and Carolina is just fading fast. Jameis Winston turns it over too much to take Tampa Bay. Haskins with the Redskins. This is not a good week to find underdogs in the NFL. I think it's going to be a very low-volume card for a lot of people out there.
Yeah, I would think so. And you mentioned Tampa Bay, and Tampa Bay's taking money from the wise guys each and every week. It reminds me a little bit of the Browns when the Browns were so bad as opposed to just being bad. But Tampa finds ways to blow the game, and it's sort of like the opposite of a New England where you look at the stats and New England should not be winning like they are winning. You look at Tampa Bay, they should be better than what they're doing. You know, their stats are always so good. It's just these damn turnovers. Well, and I'm to the point now where I just can't trust Tampa Bay because you know they're going to lose the turnover battle each and every week. And as we know, if you lose the turnover battle, you're not going to cover many games in this sport.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think I've already said I cannot back Jameis Winston again this year. We'll see if I hold to it. I certainly should after the four picks last week and did wind up on the Saints in one of the contests. So, I don't know. I can't lay four and a half with Atlanta either. So, you know, real difficult week here in the NFL, to say the least. Brian Leonard, professional handicapper over at wagertalk.com. What's going on over there right now, man?
Wednesday's video day. Be heading in there and doing all the videos. We're getting tremendous views. And now that our company is getting bigger and has more success, we're getting invited to be on. We've been on Zumo, which is a television or a computer site. And now we just got on Pluto. And I love Pluto. Pluto's got a lot of channels. I love comedy. It's got a lot of comedy channels. It's free. You just download the app and you can watch it on your smart TV. But we're on, I believe it's 571 on Pluto now. And we're very excited to be part of that. So, you'll be able to see us on videos and then even on your TV now. So it's looking up for our company. And for my own clients, I just got to get back to it and try to turn this little streak around for everybody. And I do apologize, but keep in mind, I'm not putting anything out to you that I'm not betting myself. So it'll probably be a very conservative weekend.
Brian Leonard, once again, over at wagertalk.com, at BLeonardSports on Twitter. Brian, appreciate the time as always, man. Stay dry out there. Stay safe. And we'll talk to you again next week.
Sounds great. Best of luck to everyone.
There you go. There's professional handicapper Brian Leonard from wagertalk.com. Again, at BLeonardSports on Twitter. We got one more guest, one more segment here for this Wednesday edition of Bang the Book Radio. That is Wes Reynolds, at Wes Reynolds and the number one on Twitter, contributor to the Point Spread Weekly newsletter and also a host over on VSiN. Wes, how's it going today, man?
Hey, Adam. Good to be with you. How are you, sir?
Doing very well, buddy. Appreciate your time as always, man. Thank you so much for joining me, especially because as you and I were talking about before we started recording here, I mean, damn, this is the busiest time of year, and you know, it's hard to keep tabs on everything.
It is. I mean, it seems like there's never really a break. I mean, unless you get like a totally imbalanced or weird schedule, like in hockey, where it seemed like every team was in action last night, and then you get two games, and then you get a full slate, and then you get two games. And I mean, that's kind of what you're dealing with there. And I mean, with just so much stuff and action going on, and still in the college football regular season and then NFL well underway, of course, you just have a lot going on your plate at the same time.
All right, so we'll dive into the college football card here for week 13. You sent over a handful of games to me here today, and I think some of these are very interesting types of matchups here. And we start in the Big 12 with this game between Oklahoma State and West Virginia. Oklahoma State, 7-point road favorite, heading up to Morgantown for an early kickoff here. And, you know, I was talking about liking West Virginia last week on the show, liked them a lot against Kansas State, didn't expect the outright upset. But nice to see that West Virginia finally made the switch from Austin Kendall to Jarrett Daigie. Is that part of the reason why you like the Mountaineers here this week?
It is, and I think, you're not fooling the odds makers in terms of the point spreads, where you got this West Virginia team that is trying to kind of backdoor and get bowl eligible right now. But all of a sudden, they get a big win on the road. Their other one was at Kansas, of course, before they made their offensive coordinator switch. But you know, all of a sudden you get a team with a little bit of confidence here. And Oklahoma State has kind of been rolling along. They've won three straight. They beat one at Iowa State, one against TCU, and then a nice win over Kansas last weekend. And look, we know what we get with Oklahoma State. We get a pretty good offense. They even made an offensive coordinator change this year. Still no problem. These ratings aren't based on the quality of opponent or any kind of advanced stats, but you look and they got a top 10 offense in the nation and one of the better rushing offenses in the nation. But really, this is almost a play just kind of against them because they got to go on the road with a shaky defense, not a deplorable defense, not one of the dregs of college football, but you still look at them, they're 116th in the country in passing yards allowed per game at 273. So this is a defense that I think they're just so shaky laying points on the road, even to a West Virginia team that's 4-6 and trying to really backdoor into a bowl game. But I think maybe West Virginia has found a little life, and I mean, they've still continued to compete. The cupboard, I guess, relatively bare there in West Virginia. But I think Neil Brown's doing a solid job with this team. It's just they started out so slow, and now they've made the quarterback change late. I think it's at least given them some motivation. They're a team that I think now feels that they got to have realistic bowl hopes if they could pull off this one. Then they go to TCU, and basically, it's going to be like a loser leaves town match, essentially, because I think you're going to have 2 5-6 teams basically fighting for a bowl in the last week of the season.
Well, and that's an excellent segue into another side that you're kind of looking at here. Game 137-138 is TCU and Oklahoma. We talked about this one a little bit on Tuesday's show, but again, with some of these bigger games here, and this one does draw the primetime slot, do like to crowdsource opinions a little bit whenever possible. You kind of like the idea of laying the big number here with the Sooners. Why is that?
I do, and I think Gary Patterson has done a solid job with TCU, and I think Duggan long-term, he's had some good games and some bad games, but he's a freshman quarterback, and long-term, I think he'll be a good one in Fort Worth for TCU. But I do kind of like Oklahoma here, really, because if you look at him, they look like a favorite on the surface that you should go against. Of course, they blew that lead to Iowa State and had to kind of be life and death at the end and survive a missed 2-point conversion just to get by Iowa State as 2 touchdown favorites. Then they go last week on the road, get down big to Baylor, and eventually come back and win in the final seconds in Waco. That fourth quarter, I mean, they were down double digits, and then to be able to come back, I think it showed a little. I mean, I guess some would say it showed weakness, but I guess it's in the eye of the beholder too, because it maybe showed weakness, but it also showed strength in the fact that, hey, there's a belief on this team that they can basically win and that they're never out of a game. And I think what that does in this spot is it carries momentum. It gives this team so much momentum going forward that, look, we're not out of this yet. They're still in the playoff. And it almost feels like they're sitting on one because they look like a very weak favorite that's easy to kind of go against. But I think they're sitting on one, and they haven't done so in a few weeks, where they're looking maybe to blow somebody out and impress and kind of move their way up, because the top three are going to stay, I think, the top three by and large. I don't see them necessarily getting beat. It theoretically could happen, though, but I think any combination of LSU, Clemson, Ohio State are clearly the top three, and then it's still wide open for that number four. Georgia, of course, has the inside track, but they're eventually going to have to get LSU in the SEC championship game. If they lose there, then that number four spot is really wide open. And Oklahoma, I think, certainly is one of the contenders of that. Either one of the two Pac-12 teams are going to be knocked out of it because they're probably going to play each other in that Pac-12 title game, Oregon and Utah. So that leaves Oklahoma to potentially go through the back door. And I think their hopes looked dead a few weeks ago in Manhattan, but now still very much alive.
Yeah, and there's a couple of things to talk about here with regards to this game. One of them is, much like we've seen with Clemson trying to put some style points up there when they were outside of the top four, Oklahoma has a lot of incentive to do that too. So there is that element to it where if they get up big, they're not going to sit on it, or at least they shouldn't, with Lincoln Riley understanding what's at stake. The other thing here is, I mean, look, these numbers don't come from out of nowhere. They don't come from out of the blue. I mean, there is a reason why Oklahoma was a 17 and a half point favorite at the open. I mean, again, yeah, you could say they look like a weak favorite, like you said, but again, from a power rating standpoint, factoring in home field, this is about where Oklahoma should be. So, you know, the idea of them not being a deserving favorite, there's a lot of recency bias in that narrative, and I agree with you that, you know, maybe this is a good week to capitalize on it.
Yeah, I think so. And then you have this TCU team that, how much energy are they going to have? Because this team has to fight for its life seemingly every week. They should have beaten Baylor. They didn't get it done. Had to go to double overtime, even though they led pretty much the whole game. Then they're in that dogfight hanging on by two against Texas Tech, and they've just had so many of these close shaves that you wonder what their energy level is going to be. If Oklahoma puts up two quick scores in like the first 6-7 minutes of the first quarter, you wonder where this team's going to be. And that's just something I could just visualize it happening where, okay, Oklahoma scores first, TCU stalls, then Oklahoma scores again. And before you know it, there's like 8.5 minutes on the clock and they're already down 14-0 in the first quarter. And that just, a team that I think the energy that's a little bit running on fumes at this point, then your energy really gets zapped if that scenario happens.
And I think that this is something to look at too. There are 16 5-5 teams right now here this week. And exactly the point you're making here is that if you're TCU and you're down 21-0 in the first quarter, you start thinking ahead to next week. You start thinking ahead to that game against West Virginia because you want to get bowl eligibility. If you're a 5-5 team and you're getting your ass kicked in the first quarter or at halftime, you may start planning for the next week. You may kind of sit some guys out. You may kind of let some of the underclassmen play because you want to get into that next game healthy enough to give yourself a real good chance at 6 wins. So I would pay attention to that out there from a live betting standpoint, where if you've got a 5-5 team and they're not getting that 6th win this week, I think in the second half, you know, they may just kind of fold up the tent and plan, you know, plan for the following game.
Yeah, no question about it. The last thing you want to do is get now the guy that's your starting quarterback, and especially TCU, who if this kid goes down, they don't have much behind him, because the regular guy Collins, who was kind of the co-starter earlier in the season, he's hurt. And then you've had a couple kids, the kid Dalton, who was a graduate transfer from Kansas State, he transferred. They had another kid transfer. So there's just not a lot behind these guys.
Yeah, definitely an angle to keep an eye on. Again, from a live betting standpoint, second half betting standpoint, something like that, because there will be teams that fall into that category here, not just this year, but something for you to keep in mind next year as well, with these 5-5 teams here in that second to last regular season game. One more college side you're looking at. You're thinking about going against the grain of the line move here, so I want to hear your take on this one. Game 143-144, Illinois and Iowa. Iowa up from 12.5 to 15.5, but it seems like you think this number may be getting a little bit too high.
I do, and I haven't really seen a soul on Illinois, which either should really worry me or should really make me excited to play them, depending on your perspective. But this was one I was looking at when it was I thought it was going to go up to maybe 14, and then back down. Maybe there are going to be some guys doing a little bit of funny money with this thing. Look, Illinois, I think, got the bye week at the right time, in the fact that they got bowl eligible. They had that comeback against Michigan State. And that's why I think people are fading them, because they shouldn't have had a prayer in that game. Michigan State turned it over. It was 28-3. Illinois gets a late touchdown at the end of the first half. And then the momentum was on. Michigan State started turning the ball over. The offense started to be anemic, which is usual for Sparty this year, both this year and last year. But I don't think Illinois – look, I think they're excited that they know they're going to a bowl game and they've got to 6 wins. But the line adjustment seems to fake, because they've lost 5 straight to Iowa. They got beat 63-0 last year in Champaign. And that was the worst defeat in this rivalry in the history of Illinois football. These teams have been playing off and on since 1889. So Illinois also motivated. They're trying to get their first winning regular season since 2007. If they don't get it here, and I don't think they're going to win out right here, but if they don't get it here, they'll have a chance to do that against Northwestern. You've got an Iowa team that does come off a – they finally got their signature win. They've been a good, solid team all year, but they haven't really beaten anybody. Well, now they beat a team that they've owned over the last several years in Minnesota. They keep the bronze pig, the Floyd of Rosedale trophy. They never trailed in the game, but they did get outgained 431-290. It was really kind of the – defense holding on. And Iowa before that had lost 3 single-digit games to Penn State, Michigan, and Wisconsin, and they get that win. But the question is, I think, too, how much do they have left in the emotional tank? Look, they knock off an undefeated team that was a legit dark horse to get inside the college football playoff. Now they've got Senior Day, which Senior Day, and we talk about this too a lot with college basketball, it's a melancholy day. It's a sad day. It's not a happy day. I mean, yeah, your family's there, and your parents and your siblings and your girlfriend or whomever, and everybody's there, but this is the last time you get to play on your home field. And now you've got them having to participate in this. And there's something to be said, I think, for Illinois of just having belief, even though you know you're a big underdog in this game. Started out 2-4 in the season, had back-to-back late home losses to Eastern Michigan and Nebraska. But then, now they've covered 5 straight, and they've won 4 games to get to 6-4. And I think Illinois has that belief. Look, they could have packed it in at East Lansing when they were down 28-3, but they never did. So Lovey and his guys showed some character here. They're not the more talented football team in this matchup, but I do think this line is getting a little bit out of whack, and I think you'll see some buyback here in the next 2-3 days.
Yeah, of the 3 games we talked about, I like this one the most. I think you talked about a lot of really good angles there, and in particular, again, you know, when we look at this time of the year, how much emotion is left in the gas tank? You know, how close to E are some of these teams? A team like Iowa playing so many close games in their marquee matchups, yeah, maybe they go out there and blow out Illinois, but maybe they don't, because they don't have a whole lot left in that emotional gas tank, especially coming off that big win. Illinois chance to reset coming off the bye. I will say this. I mean, this move towards my number, my power rating line is 15.5. But again, I think situationally and all the different elements that you talked about, I think there are a lot of compelling reasons to take a strong look at the Fighting Illini here in this weekend's matchup. We transition over to the NFL side of the spectrum here, and we start with a pretty interesting game that we haven't touched on yet this week. Game 253-254, Denver and Buffalo. Long trip for the Broncos, back-to-back road game situation, but you like them a little bit here, getting four against the Bills.
Yeah, and what you just said, long trip for Buffalo, back-to-back road situation, and yet they're taking the money here on this price. And so I kind of think, okay, why is that happening? I don't know if it's necessarily a backing of Denver, is more of it is perhaps a fade of Buffalo. And look, Buffalo's already, I have their season wins over. They're already matching it, so they need one more. They're dormy, to use a golf term, to get their season wins here. But if you look at Buffalo over the last month, I mean, the two teams they've beaten are the Dolphins and the Redskins. So I think that there's a little bit of, you got to show me a little bit more. They've shown me, I think Sean McDermott's a good coach, and I think they have a really good defense. But they don't exactly overwhelm you when you watch them. I think they caught Miami, even though on a road game, they caught Miami in a good spot, because Miami was feeling themselves a little bit, because they were supposed to be the worst team in the history of the NFL, and then they got two wins in a row. So, you know, eventually, we talk about emotional gas tank. I think they had that happiness there and got a couple wins in a row. I mean, they know that they're not going anywhere, where it's kind of that happiness is there, but then that reality sets in. And that okay, look, we can only be, our ceiling's only so high here. And Buffalo, I think, really took advantage of that last week. And with Denver, there is an emotional factor there too, because they blew that game in Minnesota, and they really should have won the game. I had the 10.5 with Denver, and they really should have won that game. Minnesota makes a big fourth quarter comeback and wins the game, but I like what I've seen a little bit. I don't know if he's the savior, and I'm not sure he's the long-term answer in Denver, but I like what I've seen a little bit out of Brandon Allen. I think that this is a guy. I mean, how long has it been for the Denver Broncos to have a quarterback that you can have confidence, can throw the ball down the field, and you can have a couple long games? And that's what they had against Minnesota last week. So I think you got a Denver team that, I think, knows that they're not going to go anywhere for playoffs or anything, being at 3-7, that they're just not going to rally into the playoffs. But I think they got a little bit of confidence. And I think when they see that, when you see that your quarterback can make you plays, that I think gives the defense and the rest of the team motivation. And that says, okay, we got a guy here. We got a dude here. So we don't have to feel like our margin for error is zero, and that we got to be totally perfect because we got guys that can make plays for us.
Yeah. And I think too, I mean, it's a different type of mindset for certain teams coming off of a collapse like that. For Denver, like you said, I mean, they're not going anywhere anyway. So the fact that they didn't get that win probably pisses them off. It's not like it was a lost opportunity to get back into a playoff race or something like that. Probably does keep them a little bit more focused here this week, because wins are so difficult to come by that now they're going to say, well, let's go get another one. Let's go actually finish this one off. Whereas you have a good team that blows a lead like that, and maybe you draw a parallel to somebody like Baylor in college football this week, that one's going to linger a whole lot more for a team like that. So I think that's an interesting angle, an interesting way of looking at this game. And again, I mean, you've had a lot of people wanting to fade the Bills anyway. So we are seeing that here. And in fact, we could be seeing 3.5 here sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I think that's probably going to happen. I'll be interested to see what the Super Contest and the Circus Sports Million lines come out to this week. Because one of the things, too, and in talking with some of these guys on the VSiN shows that I'm on, is that they are basically, when they're putting out lines for these contests, and especially the Super Contest guys that I've talked to, they basically are trying to put the line where they think it's going to close. So that's what they're trying to do. So, like, it's four right now, and it may stick at four, so they may just go ahead and put out four because it's market-wide. But they also could put out 3.5 because they probably think it's going to close more toward the Denver side than the Buffalo side.
One more game here on the NFL card to talk about, and then we'll finish up with some golf here. Game 269-270, Dallas and New England. I've bet against New England. I've picked against New England three or four times across both contests here, using the same picks in both contests over the course of the season, and every single time I've gotten beat. So
that's the story of the last 20 years.
That's true. That is very, very true. Is this the week that you go against New England and actually cash a ticket?
I think it could be, but then again, we always say that. So if those that are in contest entries want to just kind of shirk this game and say, well, I'm not going to use it. I'm either going to play him or not fade him. I could certainly understand that and couldn't argue that. Look, 6.5. And I was talking about this with Dwayne Colucci over at the Rampart Casino, which is a satellite property of the South Point out in Las Vegas. He thinks this is going to close closer to 6 than it will be to 7. I don't think you're going to see a 7 here. I know you've got a couple where 6.5s are juiced, like you're seeing at Westgate Superbook USA, -120. They don't want to put 7 out there because people will gobble them up very, very quickly. But, yeah, I think this is going to stay with 6, 6.5. And obviously at 6.5, you're going to see a bunch of Patriots teasers, because you can tease them down to essentially a half a point or one, depending on how many points you want to tease them down. But I think you're going to get enough Dallas support where this action, I don't think it'll look like last week where the books, most of them pretty much needed the Eagles. I think you'll get plenty of Dallas support here. And I like what I've seen. I know that the defense was a little shaky against Detroit. It was shaky against Minnesota. So, basically, I mean, if you want to move the ball on Dallas because they'll over-pursue a little bit, run a bunch of screen passes. Run a big screen game like Minnesota did with Dalvin Cook, and you're gonna pile up yards. But I like what I've seen out of Dallas, and I've always been a little lukewarm on Dak in terms of, okay, is he really the $40 million man? And I'm not sure that he is, but the guy's been pretty damn good the last couple weeks. And this is the best I've seen him play. I think he's been fantastic. And I think really what you need in Dallas is you need the coaches to stay out of the way. You need Jason Garrett, maybe by association Jerry Jones, just stay out of the way. Let Dak do what he does, man, because he's doing it. He's finding guys down the field. The receivers are healthy with Gallup and Cooper and all the different weapons that they have. This is a Dallas team, though, that I still think has something to prove. They're as talented as any team in the NFC. Everybody before the season talked about the Philadelphia Eagles. Oh, they got so much talent. They got so much talent. They do. They've got a lot of injuries, to be fair. But Dallas has talent up and down that roster. They really do. And the one thing that they haven't done is really beaten a real elite team. If you want to be in the elite, you got to beat the elite. The old Ric Flair slogan, to be the man, you got to beat the man. And Dallas kind of needs to meddle up here and show something that they can beat an elite team. And it's a tough environment. It's the toughest environment you can probably get because you're playing the number one team in the AFC in their house in Foxborough. But I do like Dallas a little bit here. Unfortunately, I don't think you're going to see 7. If you want 7, you're going to have to pay that tax to get it, and probably to take +7 minus about 125, because we know on key numbers it's going to be juiced a little bit more than if you bought a half point onto another number. So, yeah, I do like the Cowboys here, and I think what Tom Brady said, look, they're always so politically correct where they don't really give you anything, but I thought Tom Brady gave some insight where it's like, hey, our defense and our special teams have to do it for us right now. And I don't think he was necessarily telling the truth or telling falsehoods there or playing possum.
Yeah, and I think, too, last week with Philadelphia, it's a little bit different with a 3.5 or 4-point number than a 6.5, because New England's offense is not great. I mean, they've scored a lot of points this year because the defense has forced a lot of turnovers. They're plus 18 in turnover margin, giving them some short fields. This is a game where, assuming Dallas takes care of the football, as they should, as they have most of the year, you're asking a really pedestrian New England offense to get margin for you. And maybe this is the type of spot you want to look to go against that. Yeah, they covered some big numbers against Miami. Miami's terrible. Washington's awful. Giants, same thing. They're not very good. Jets, they're not very good. And the Browns, yeah, they covered the double-digit number there, but the Browns were the better team for most of that game. So I don't know if I can do it again. I don't know if I have the heart to do it again, but I think it's Dallas or nothing for me.
Yeah, and you mentioned the Browns, and the Browns really – the Browns, ironically enough, as poorly as it seems they've been coached this year, really kind of laid a little bit of the blueprint for, I think, the rest of the league. You can run on these guys. And Nick Chubb ran all over. If he doesn't fumble a couple times after really big runs because the Patriots are so good at forcing turnovers, Cleveland's right in that game. And, I mean, they really – and I did bet the Browns in that game, too. They really should have covered and probably should have had a chance to really compete for the win at the end, but didn't get it done. Dallas can still run on these guys. They couldn't do it against Minnesota 2 weeks ago on Sunday Night Football. But, look, Zeke, I think, is back in football shape, and he can get loose on these guys. And that makes Dallas awful dangerous because we've known that they've always had the ability to pretty much to run the football and put up big numbers. But now you got a Dak Prescott that's got some confidence here that I think is probably playing the best football he's ever played in his young career. And when you combine that and mix that together, you could have a potential for a pretty lethal offense.
All right, so we finish up this Wednesday edition of the show talking a little bit of golf here. We've got a tournament that starts tonight over in Dubai and then a tournament that starts tomorrow in the PGA Tour down in Sea Island, Georgia. We'll start with the first one here, the one that tees off tonight. I believe it's 11:30 Eastern time for the DP World Tour Championship, the European Tour Championship event. Rory is your 4-1 favorite. John Rahm is about 6-1. Fleetwood, Reed, Rose, Hatton, all in double digits here. Wes, who do you like in this event?
Yeah, I mean, it is really tough to make a case, and I did not bet this, so I'm going to try to make a case when I say it's really tough to make a case. Rory McIlroy should be the rightful favorite here. He's won this event twice. He's won two big events really in the last 2 months. I think he's got four finishes, a third or better in the last six events coming in. So the form is great. He just won the WGC, HSBC in China. He won the Tour Championship. So he's the rightful favorite here. Rahm has been off a little bit of a long layoff, so he might be one I'm looking to skirt here, even though he did win on his course debut at the Earth Course here at Dubai 2 years ago. But just looking a little bit down the board, one I did kind of like, but he finished runner-up, was tied for second here last year. He's been playing a lot more European Tour events. I did take a look with Patrick Reed at 16-1. He's about 16 or 18-1, depending on your shop. He's got, I think, a little bit of confidence because he ended up having to be a captain's pick for the President's Cup starting next month in Australia. And I think that maybe gave him a little bit of a confidence because if you remember the Ryder Cup, he had played so well in international competitions. But last year in Paris, it was an absolute disaster. They paired him with Tiger Woods. Reed, I think, clearly brought the team down. And there was a lot of drama with him and Spieth not playing together anymore. So you've got a guy that comes in with good finishes. He's been top 10 the last 2 weeks on these European Tour events. So I liked him. I also liked Paul Casey at 25-1. Hasn't played in this event in about 5 years, but has a lot of desert golf experience, has won in Abu Dhabi, has won in Bahrain, of course, lives in Arizona pretty much full-time, so practices a lot in the desert. So he's got a pretty good desert record. And then one guy that's a little bit of a long shot, Lee Westwood, and I saw him anywhere from about 60-70-1. He's 46 years old, so a lot of people aren't prone to pick him, but he actually was one of the best putters in the field in the Ned Bank last week in Sun City in South Africa, finished top five. He's working with a former European Tour player, actually still a European Tour player, Robert Rock, on his putting, and his putting has really been a lot better, and it showed last week. He was really burning the edges down there in Sun City, and he was the guy that actually won this event, the inaugural event of the DP Tour Championship back in 2009, so he does have a win on the course. And look, there's 50 players in the field. It used to be 60. There's only 50, so you really can't go deep and play too many guys here.
All right, so we transition to North America here. We go to the PGA Tour event, Sea Island, Georgia. And one of the things we talked about yesterday with Brian Blessing with regards to his handicap for this tournament, and I know this is something that you've focused on here in the past as well, a lot of guys live in Sea Island, Georgia. So they've got a lot of familiarity with this course and this environment.
Yeah, and I mean, and it's priced into the market as well. I ended up not playing a ton of guys that live on Sea Island, but that have plenty of Georgia ties. Harris English is one that does live at least nearby, who I did take last week. Was right in the mix to get a win at Mayakoba and then had a double bogey at 16 because, of course, the last four holes, it was darkness, so they had to start crack of dawn early Monday morning, and English didn't make that birdie putt that he had left over at a 15-footer for birdie. It could have tied for the lead, didn't make it, and then gets a double bogey that put him down to fifth when he had a legitimate shot to kind of backdoor and win the tournament. But he was the shortest priced guy, I liked at 25-1. Couple other guys, Russell Henley, who's very familiar with this course, loves the Bermuda greens. Of course, he's a Georgia Bulldog, and actually ended up playing, I think, three or four guys that played their college golf at University of Georgia because they have experience, at least on the course, even if they don't live in St. Simon's Island or in Sea Island. Brian Harmon was another guy that I played as well, that's an ex-Georgia Bulldog, and you know, there's a lot of those guys in this field. Kevin Kisner has won this event before as well. Zach Johnson was a guy I took a shot at that has not won in a really long time, but he's kind of one of the touring pros for this course. It's really him and Davis Love III that are the two main guys. And he's been playing a little bit better of late, Zach Johnson. So I took him at around 50-1. Some good long shots. Robbie Shelton, who was on the first page of the leaderboard last week at Mayakoba, has had a couple really good finishes in the fall series at around 100-1. And then Mark Hubbard, I won with Lanto Griffin in Houston, but the guy who finished right behind him was Mark Hubbard, 125-1. Hubbard is the guy that finished second in Houston, and these Bermuda greens are similar to the ones he putted on at the Houston Open, where he finished second. So you can go a little deep in this tournament. You don't get much chalk. I mean, yeah, Webb Simpson's been in the playoff here many years ago, and he's 10-1, and he's the highest-ranked player in the field. But this is a tournament where you'll get some middle- or longer-priced guys hit.
Wes Reynolds, just working and follow on Twitter, at Wes Reynolds and the number one. You can check him out on VSiN as well as in that Point Spread weekly newsletter. Wes, when can people hear you on VSiN?
Yeah, I'll be on tomorrow and Friday, Thursday and Friday, 8 to 10 Pacific. I do the second half of the Green Zone. And then on the weekends, 2 to 6 Pacific on Saturday, kind of that into that middle, 3:30 Eastern to the late college football window on Saturday evening. And then 3 to 7 Pacific on Sunday for the late window into the NFL and going into the Sunday night football game with Green Bay and San Francisco. And then Monday nights, 6 to 10 Pacific.
Well, again, make sure you follow Wes on Twitter, at Wes Reynolds and the number one. Wes, appreciate your time as always, man. Thank you so much for joining me. We'll talk to you again next week.
Adam, a pleasure, man. Thank you.
There you go. There's Wes Reynolds. Again, you can hear him on VSiN and also check him out on Twitter, at Wes Reynolds and the number one. Coming up on our Thursday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll talk a whole bunch of football with professional handicapper Brad Powers from bradpowerssports.com. And then I'll finish up with a solo segment tomorrow talking about the college football games that we didn't get to here throughout the week on the show. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. And I will talk to you again tomorrow.